Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, I'm still struggling with what to say during this point, we have Nick Newman.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. And, coming back from a hiatus, Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian. Well, I'd come back before.
Yeah, I know, but you were gone last week.
Oh. So I'm gradually coming back.
Gradually coming back.
Yeah.
Belated happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
No problem.
Aw.
Everyone, tweet your happy birthdays to Amanda.
No.
Yes. Yes.
You're terrible.
Yeah, fucking deal with it. So, today on the podcast, we are just going to be talking about the Netflix original movie, oddly enough, Beasts of No Nation. This is directed by Cary Joji Fukunaga, adapted by him into a screenplay from the novel by, would anyone else like to give this a try?
Oh, man.
Uzodinma Iwiali?
Let me look up his name.
It's
Uzodinma Iwiala. Uzodinma Iwiala. That sounds
Iwiala?
Right enough.
Iwiala sounds right, yeah. Uzodinma Iwiala.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that. So, oh, good Lord. This is a movie about child soldiers in Africa, and that's not me being reductive. The movie never makes a point of saying where exactly it takes place. This movie stars Idris Elba and Abraham Atta. That will be it. That's the only thing we're going to talk about. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone that you can write to us at podcast@thefilmstage.com with any issues, questions, comments you'd like to add to the conversation. You can also give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. And of course, follow us on Twitter, because starting now that Twitter has a polling function, weirdly enough, we are going to start handing over the reins as to what we watch to you, the fine listeners at home, every now and then. Do not expect that to happen every day.
Everybody was like gasping with excitement until you said every now and then, and then they were like, aw.
It's going to be specifically for times what, like now, for instance, when there may be wide releases, but we don't really want to talk about them, so we'll see if there's like a smaller movie.
We don't want to talk about
in.
Burnt or our
I would have been down
crisis.
To talk about Burnt.
Sure.
Looks like a wreck. But what do I know? So apologies to everyone. We're not talking about Burnt. I'm sorry. But what are we talking about? We're talking about Beasts of No Nation. So all that housekeeping aside, I guess we can just dip right into it. So here's the trailer for Beasts of No Nation.
What is this thing doing here? What are you doing here? Who is responsible for this thing? Now, what are they calling you? Agu! I saved your life. Go!
So, Beasts of No Nation is the story of Agu, a young boy in, as we said, an unspecified West African nation that is being torn apart by civil war, who loses his family and is conscripted by a local warlord, I guess you could call him, as a child soldier. So, let's just dive right into this. First of all, this is the first movie produced specifically for and by Netflix. They're utilizing the director of Sin Nombre and perhaps more famously, True Detective Season 1, I should make a note of. And it had a very limited theatrical release because most theaters didn't want to touch this because it would also be out on Netflix. And did anyone actually make it to the theater to see this?
Nope.
No.
Me neither. Because it played in perhaps one or two theaters in DC and I was not able to easily get to them. So it's a bold new release strategy for a movie that takes a look at some bold subject matter. Let's see what we thought about it. Nick Newman, what are your thoughts on Beasts of No Nation?
There's been a lot of discussion about this film's format, almost more so than the movie itself, overlooking the fact that it's based on this novel, that it's Cary Fukunaga's third feature, his first in more than 4.5 years, following the 8-hour True Detective and all of that. But I do think the distribution method sort of matters, because I was watching this movie last night, I got about an hour in, and I thought, this is pretty bad, so maybe I can just go do something else right now and pause it and come back. And so I did that. And I was pleasantly surprised to find out that when I came back this morning and I watched the remaining, 80 minutes or so, the movie wasn't as bad. It was a little better. It wasn't quite as stupid. It wasn't quite as unnecessarily broad in a way to sort of get its point across. But I, as a fan of Fukunaga, as someone who liked, most of the first season of True Detective, as someone who has been, mostly positive on his two features prior, I don't think this movie quite works for a number of reasons. One is that I think that this movie kind of has a weird... Watching this, I kept expecting the movie to stop dead and for it to switch to this sort of, mid-2000s digital video footage, and for Ricky Gervais's Andy Millman to pop out behind a wall or something. Andy Millman being Ricky Gervais's character on Extras. Because something about this movie kind of felt like... It sort of felt like, the almost like a parody of, child conflict movie or something. A lot of it felt like it was inhabiting this very familiar format of, little boys with his family living happy in this village. Ah, look at the village, how quaint their life is. And then it's interrupted, and the boy runs away, and he stumbles into this weird sort of, nightmare fantasy of African child soldier life that is led by Idris Elba putting on some vaguely African accent, because the movie doesn't specify what nation it is. He's just kind of talking the way, you imagine an African warlord would talk if they spoke English. And I didn't find a second in this movie very convincing, frankly. I mean, I thought it was kind of dumb how he goes from this scared kid who's being intimidated by this band of soldiers to some trained killer in about 9 minutes or so. Suddenly he's just being trained and he's, going through the process and whatnot. But then sort of when it's dramatically convenient for the character to be scared in a tight, in a tight situation, in a bind, then he's all of those things. And then it kind of goes back to him being a killer. And it has some exciting moments of interest. It has a nice use of long takes, I think. Cinematographically, it looks quite nice. Cary Fukunaga is also the cinematographer on this movie. It's probably worth noting. And I think that, there was sort of this fear I had going into it that because it's quote-unquote a Netflix movie, it would look cheap, because Netflix's TV shows tend to look cheap. And so I thought that would kind of carry over into this movie, but it doesn't. This actually looks like a real movie, which helps to a certain extent. But overall, yeah, I just didn't really buy this movie. I mean, from sort of the quote-unquote brutality of it, it felt sort of staged, and it felt kind of like, I kept watching this. I kept having a vision of first world audiences sitting comfortably in their homes, watching this on their HD TVs and sort of clutching their pearls and saying, I can't believe how horrible it is. What's going on over there? Oh, my God. And then that was kind of, that's what I kept thinking while I was watching this. I couldn't get that image out of my head, because that's kind of how it played. Because again, it just feels like sort of this collection of, there's kind of this coating over it of a well-shot movie that, has some nice, does some nice things with the camera, has some nice editing tricks and whatnot, but it's kind of on top of, sort of a mediocre script, and I couldn't really get past that. And, I also, in the case of Elba, I always kind of felt like I always felt like I was sort of looking at an actor giving a performance. I didn't really buy him as the warlord. Mm-hmm. Something about him didn't seem really convincing. I think part of it is the fact that it's a familiar looking actor speaking English. And so it sort of seems like a movie to me in that way. So overall, yeah, I mean, initially I thought this was quite bad, and then it was just sort of, then, you know, there are a few good scenes thrown in and some things of interest and things maybe worth discussing, but yeah, overall I found the experience pretty middling. So.
All right, Amanda Waltz, what about your thoughts?
I actually agree with quite a bit of what Nick said. I found this to be very grueling in a way that was, I just felt unnecessary. I think Nick's, the pearl clutching is very appropriate here because it reminded me of when I read this story about Steve McQueen where he was talking about whenever he went to screenings of 12 Years a Slave, people would actually come up to him afterwards and say, oh, wow, I never knew slavery was that bad. And it's just that level of ignorance to need to go to a movie that depicts slavery to know that slavery is bad. I kept thinking about that when I was watching this movie because I just kept thinking, you know, people are probably watching this movie and thinking, oh, wow, I didn't know child soldiers, being a child soldier was so terrible. It's like, yeah. And I just kept thinking that the entire time is that I just felt like this is a movie. Uh-oh, we lost Nick.
It's okay, just keep going.
Okay. I just felt like this is a movie to sort of illustrate how terrible being a child soldier is, which, you know, I think really is at the expense of the story in a way where I really felt that the first half an hour of the movie was just way too idealized. I thought a lot of the scenarios with Agu and his family and his friends were really precious. That whole thing with the imagination TV, I thought was a little, I kind of cringed whenever that came up. And just the whole dinner scene where they're all burping and farting and laughing, and I don't know, it just seemed very like they went from, oh, war has not touched us at all, which is sort of unbelievable considering that it seems like this conflict has been going on, and I mean as many conflicts in Africa have been going on for decades. So it made it hard for me to believe that like war has not touched this family at all and that they're just happy and that they're settled and everything's cool. And there's just so much voiceover too. And I really think the voiceover diminishes a lot of the emotional resonance some of these scenes could have had because it's just Ibrahim Attah talking about how, oh, I loved my mother. She was wonderful. And my father was wonderful. And he used to be my teacher. And I remember how wonderful life in the village used to be. And I don't need to hear that. I can see it. And then it goes from that to him being recruited as a child soldier. And I kind of agree with Nick's reading of Idris Elba. I really think he was going for tour de force with this performance, and he actually produced the movie, which is not surprising at all.
Well, yeah, every time you get a big celebrity, they become a producer because it's a way to bring more money in.
Oh, that's true, I guess. Well, no, and I understand that, but he's really going for tour de force, and they're just, I mean, it definitely feels very measured and a little put on in a way that I think, you know, is just kind of it. Like Nick said, it is very unconvincing. And also just some of the stuff that his character does, it doesn't feel like he's a person, an actual like an actual person as much as a representation, just of sort of the horrors of war. And I don't know, it's just, and I think the whole thing, even just the look of the film, it is of course very stylized, but at times it didn't, I think it's very ugly in a way that is appropriate, but then it's also trying these things. Like there's the scene where they are encroaching on the village and everything becomes sort of monochromatic. Everything turns red, and it just kind of, I don't know, it just felt kind of like very stylized in a way that didn't really do anything. Because I didn't know if it was supposed to be that's what Agu was seeing, because he has started sniffing gunpowder. I'm not really sure what kind of drugs they're being made to take or do. I don't know. But I think Fukunaga, serving as both director and cinematographer, kind of took away that sort of meeting of minds collaboration that really helps create a little bit more of, I don't know what to say. So it's something like a little bit more of a vision that isn't just like just the directors. And I think with Fukunaga, I really didn't like True Detective the first season. So just watching this, I really, there were so many aspects of it that just made me think of True Detective, which just made me really not like it even more. Just so many like, just long takes, like that one scene in the house with the woman and her daughter. I was just like, oh my God, please. Yeah, I just found this movie to be very grueling. Not to say that I really think the lead child actor, Abraham Atta, was amazing. And there were quite a few scenes where the scene where he's separated from his mother, I thought was really affecting. And I don't know, there is actually a film that came out a few years ago called War Witch that also covers child soldiers that I think actually is probably a little bit more specific. I haven't seen it, but just reading about it, and I remember like writing about it for the film stage a while back, it just seems like there's more specificity to it as opposed to this movie, where I just felt, I think that lack of knowing where you are and just hearing like acronyms like, oh, the UPC and the UN and the NDF. It's like I don't know any of this. Like, I don't, you know, I had to go and like look up all of these, basically all of these organizations, and I just not knowing.
Do they exist?
Yeah. Well, the NDF is the National Defense Force. UPC might be Union of the Peoples of Cameroon. I don't know, because I think that lack of specificity really kind of makes it, I don't know. It just didn't really like grab me. It didn't make me feel like, it didn't really like anchor me in a place and in a situation that like I really understood what was going on and why this was happening to these children or to Agu. I think having to do, I don't mind doing extra research for a film. But with this one, I just really had a hard time with it.
So it's weird, 'cause I hear like what Nick was saying about the sort of, the word I'm looking for, the paint by numbers nature of the child soldier narrative is how I felt during something like Blood Diamond. If you remember that there was a child soldier subplot in Blood Diamond.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I felt like this was actually a lot better. I didn't mind the lack of specificity, because I at some point just gave up trying to understand who was fighting who or for what. Because I think that looking at the narrative of the film and what it's trying to say, that's pretty much what our protagonist is going through. He's given a gun and told that he's going to have a chance to get revenge against the people who killed his father and his brother. And he takes it, and it doesn't matter what the political forces are. He's kind of indoctrinated into this lifestyle, and he takes to it because it gives him something to cling to in the wake of the loss of his entire life. So I can understand some of the complaints against this film, but I actually really enjoyed it, if that's the right word, which it's probably not. I... Because how much can you really enjoy a film about child soldiers? But I just... I understand how much it sucks to think about people saying things like, oh, I didn't realize slavery was that bad, or that being a child soldier wouldn't be such a buzzkill. But that's the power of film, because it does make you empathize on a human level with a human character in front of you, rather than trying to face up to the abstract facts in a history book.
Well, and I understand that, but what I'm trying to say is just... You should know just from the term slavery and what it means that it's bad. And I think that's what bothers me about that kind of thing. Like, but that's what I mean. It's just that, and I'm not saying that this movie is just for ignorant people, but, you know, it, just having to, it's kind of like when people say, oh, I don't have to see a rape in a film to know that rape is terrible. Like, it's kind of the same thing. I don't know. I think to me, it's just a little much.
Okay.
But go ahead. Sorry.
I don't know. I just, I didn't find it to be that unnecessary. I can't think of the correct word to describe what I'm saying, but I was involved in the story of this child. I was not really aghast at what was going on, because I figured this is what it would be like, but it's one thing to know and another to see. And I'm not going to say that this really expanded my understanding of the child soldier situation, but it does give some context to how, quote unquote, to steal a phrase from Nick Newman, voluntary the entire thing can feel to the person who's in it. I mean, you hear child soldier and you imagine kids taken, locked up, and forced into service against their will, but it's a lot more insidious than that. And I think that, if anything, that's the one good thing that I assume this book and this movie can show you, is that it's not as black and white and as simple as you may think it is. Situations in these countries make it so that this is a viable and at times even enviable option, which is even more horrifying than pressed service against one's will. It becomes its type of brainwashing. And I thought that that, coupled with performances that I thought were very good and filmmaking that I thought was very good, made this worth watching.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish I had more to say. I mean, this is probably like a 4 out of 5 star movie for me. I think that the subject matter, and I didn't think it looked cheap either. I actually was pretty impressed with a lot of the set pieces and the verisimilitude of everything.
Well, and I mean, it was shot in Ghana. I mean, it's,
yes,
basically on the, I mean, I don't know, on location, but it does have that. Yeah. I mean, it isn't a bad looking film. I think, yeah, I just felt like, it's kind of like when I make myself listen to the news. I don't enjoy listening to the news.
Okay.
But I make myself listen to it, even though I know there's horrible things going on that I'm going to hear about it, and I'm going to hear all the details about it, but I make myself listen to it. That's kind of how I felt watching this movie. It's like, I'm making myself watch this movie to maybe, like, help myself more fully understand how terrible the situation is. I didn't enjoy it, which So it's a very bitter pill of a movie. So yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know if, like you said, Brian, the enjoyment of it, it's kind of a strange word to use. Like when talking about watching it, just in general. Like,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, you're talking to me. I put on Shame every now and then just because it's a good movie.
Speaking of Steve McQueen.
Yeah, Steve McQueen. I did buy 12 Years a Slave under the impression that I could do the same thing with that.
Mm.
Not so much.
Yeah.
That is one of those movies where the content does get in the way of my enjoyment of just being able to marvel at what a filmmaker has been able to do. And
right.
I think that this one might actually skirt the line more towards the repeat watchability for me. Because, ooh, yeah, there's like three or four scenes that are truly reprehensible. But there is some, and this could be thought of as a knock against the movie, there are some scenes with some artistic flourishes that I quite enjoyed. Such as a scene where the vegetation seems to turn red around everyone.
Well, that was the thing I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I liked that. I would enjoy seeing that again, maybe divorced of everything else. But because this is Netflix, there are no chapter markers. So I can't just go back and watch that scene. Similarly, I thought that the long take of them entering the house with the mother and daughter was harrowing in a way that could be viewed as needing further watch or warranting further viewing to kind of understand and take from.
Yeah.
It sounds so weird.
Wow, Brian, you are a masochist.
I know. I understand how it could feel that way, but I'm not. I just enjoy watching people who are good at their craft execute it well. I mean, this is the same reason I listen to Mahler for fun. Like, every now and then, I just want to see someone do something well. I want to view a piece of art that executes perfectly. Maybe executes was a poor choice of words there.
Mm.
I apologize.
Oh, man. Yikes. This movie really raped and pillaged your emotions.
Oh, for the love of God.
Right,
oh,
Brian?
Oh, my God. Holy Mother of God.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it is. I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of the same thing that I did with World of Tomorrow, the Don Hertzfeld short. I mean, that movie breaks you over its knee, but I watched that legitimately four times in a row.
Well, and I think there's things about this film where I just kept thinking, oh, this is Fukunaga's Apocalypse Now. Because there are scenes where there's a tracking shot. I'm speaking specifically to the one tracking shot of toward the end where Idris Elba's character, does he have, he's just called the Commandant. I don't know if he actually has a name, but
Commandant.
Where he puts, they basically raid this village and he has two, I imagine, sort of elders in this courtyard, and he tapes grenades to their mouths. And then after he does that, one of his boys runs in and gives him a message, and then they start walking away. And as they're walking away, they're going through this, this entryway where you can't see the men in the courtyard anymore. And you realize that there are, I guess, strings attached to,
yeah, they had strings
to Elba. So as he's walking away, the strings get tugged out, and then you see the explosion, and Elba's just, I think he says something like, oh, my ears. And I'm like, is this supposed to be funny?
I think it's supposed to show the callousness of this man.
Right, but it just kind of reminded me of the Robert Duvall scene in Apocalypse Now, where you're obviously sort of weirdly charmed by Robert Duvall's character, but
that is definitely not what this scene is doing.
Yeah,
this
and
scene
that's
is supposed to be more chilling. It's because the scene with Robert Duvall is supposed to be chilling,
but
there's
also
a heightened logic to Apocalypse Now that I think makes it funny.
But it just reminded me of, yeah, but it just reminded me of that scene with Duvall a lot. I mean, just to a degree where it just seemed very much like this film was influenced by that film. I don't know. I don't think I like this film very much.
That's yeah, fine. I don't know. I it's again, it sounds weird to say I like this film. I don't know that everyone should watch it.
Yeah, it's just for me, it's not even a matter of whether or not I found it, you know, harrowing or whatever. I just didn't find an effective portrayal of this kind of thing because it just felt like a series of, you know, it felt like a stitching together of scenes.
Right, yeah.
Sort of expect from a movie of this sort, in a way. It didn't feel like there were many original ideas in this
film.
I was rarely moved by anything.
I was very rarely moved, other than maybe the scene with Aguna's mother, and of course with his father and his brother, but that's because the film has set up in, like I said, in the most precious way that, you know, his family's very close to one another. So, of course, that was incredibly sad, but there just were no small moments. I think that's the thing that I didn't like about this film. Everything was big. Everything was broad. There was so much ceremony in this film. Like, every single time they were getting ready to do something, there was just, like, this huge ceremony beforehand where it just felt like, okay, is this supposed to go on for this long? I feel like it's been like 10 minutes and they're still chanting and they're still like getting pumped up to go into this village. And I don't know.
For me, it helped. Those scenes like that helped to draw parallels to things in my own life and seeing how you can utilize, I'm going to get there, Amanda, give me a second. You can utilize child psychology to bend a kid to your will fairly easily. So you find this young kid in the woods, and his father and his brother are dead. And you tell him, okay, you have no power. We're going to give you some power, and you can take revenge. And he says, okay, because little kids want agency. They want to be given, especially by an adult, adult-like responsibilities, especially when they feel at their most powerless. And then before you go out to do anything, I mean, think back to when you're on like a sports team. Not even like in high school, but in elementary school, you would have your little chants and stuff to get you psyched and pumped up to go do the thing. And so there were moments like that where it's like, if they were on a soccer field and this guy was leading them in a chant, it would be adorable. But these kids are toting AK-47s or possibly 74s.
Right.
Some of them look newer models. And so it was a little... Again, insightful to see the way that it wasn't like, if you don't go hurt these people, I'm going to shoot you. But it's like, look, it's like a game. It's like we're playing this game and it's you. He has that speech, the commandant, about, you know, these are the people who feed the enemy. These are the people who clothe the enemy and help the enemy. And so they are the enemy. Mm-hmm. And it appeals to that simplistic black and white nature of a child. Where you say, these are the people who help the people who hurt your family, and that's all there is to it.
Right, and I understand that. I think it was just the sheer amount of it that was depicted in the film, where it just seemed like there was just tons of it.
And like, I think that helps to drive it towards its eventual ending.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Well, it's not like, and I don't, it's not as if like the issue of child soldiers isn't an important one. So I don't want any listener to think that, you know, I'm saying that this isn't like the subject matter in this movie is obviously incredibly important and terrible and horrifying. And it's, I don't know. I think it's just, I just wasn't drawn into it, and I didn't find it necessarily chilling because I think I was so distracted by Elba's performance that I never got a sense that like Agu was going like it wasn't even necessarily that I didn't feel like he was any sense of danger, but I don't know. The whole thing with him and like the pedo stuff, That was, man. And that is like, and I think that does bring into the fact that like sex is used as a tool in war. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess I appreciate that, but I don't know. This is just a rough one, guys.
I mean, yeah, it's, I'm not telling anyone to run out and see it or stay in and see it because it's on Netflix.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I've said all I can say. Poor
stars. Yeah, I weirdly have very little to say about this movie. My reaction to it was just kind of, I will say this. I do give Netflix credit for making this their first sort of their entry into the market, because even though I don't think the movie's very good, it is, you know, I mean, it's not totally,
it's not
conventional.
27 Adam Sandler films.
Exactly.
It's not a crowd pleaser.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not the Ridiculous Six.
Oh, good.
Which is going to be their release in December. It's got, you know, it's got brutality to it. It's got a certain unflinching quality, you know, at its core, and I think that it's a good sign for what they'll be doing.
Yeah.
Right.
So
they found a director who has a clear vision, and they gave him the go to do a very difficult film.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I will say the sound design in this is great.
Mm.
I thought the sound design was great.
Mm.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I you know, it's funny how that seems like an aspect of it that would be best experienced in the theater, weirdly
enough.
Yeah,
I was upset.
Sometimes that just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, that's it for our talk on Beasts of No Nation.
Did you wanna talk about the ending? You don't want to spoil it?
I mean, do you all have anything to say about it?
we could
do a spoiler section, but Nick has already said everything he needs to say.
I will say I did love that the Supreme Commandant was dressed like Billy Ocean circa 1986.
Wow.
That beautiful linen, short-sleeved.
Wow, that's quite the way of looking at it.
That is indeed a way of looking at it.
He was wearing, like, I swear to God, he was wearing that linen, like, short-sleeved coat that was just, I was like, oh.
I'm amazed you knew anything about Billy Ocean outside of that one song.
I will say, I love the movie Romancing the Stone when I was a kid, and I watched the music video that Billy recorded.
Okay. The only song of his I know is, you know, the Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car.
Dreams.
He had a very, very specific way of dressing that I was like, oh my god, I can't help but think of this right now. I felt so terrible thinking of it because of like how terrible and brutal this movie was, but the minute I saw him I was like, oh my god. I can't believe I'm thinking this right now.
Yeah, that is a pretty weird thing to think about during this film.
Very, very weird thing to think about. Yeah, I think it ended very, I mean, it ended anticlimactically, but I think that that is a very appropriate for...
Yeah, I thought the ending was quite appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a little uplifting in a way that I thought was... I don't know.
I think it would be one thing for the movie to end on a note of utter desolation.
But you don't want to, like, an Yvonne's childhood ending?
Yeah, I think that in a movie like this, you want to give people at home a reason to hope for hope, because
yeah,
a movie that ends, let's say, with literally every character dying can serve to only further enervate people's energy towards any given organization or cause. So by offering a glimmer of hope, it helps to ease the blow and give a sense that perhaps a better world is possible.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Oh god. All right. Since we're finishing earlier than we have been recently, let's just quickly run through some Blu-rays. Inside Out's coming to Blu-ray.
Still haven't seen it.
Well, I thought Inside Out was good.
I know people who, I have a friend actually in particular who has been disappointed with almost every new movie he's seen this year, and he said, but Inside Out is great.
I loved Inside Out. Amanda, are you okay?
No, I just reminded me of something, but go on. I'm not going to bore you with another story.
The End of the Tour is also coming to Blu-ray, which I did not see, but I want to. Did anyone see that?
Oh, yeah.
No. I was curious about it, but...
As was I around. So
I thought the marketing for that film was really odd, because it made it almost seem like a buddy, like an uplifting buddy film.
Yeah.
Which I don't... It's not.
It's not, no.
No.
We also have... Chris Evans' directorial debut, Before We Go.
Oh.
Yeah, I did not hear good things about that. Really? However, I did want to talk about, coming to Blu-ray, Croupier. Are people aware of Croupier?
I've never seen it.
I see this cover with Clive Owen.
Yeah, the indomitable Clive Owen, directed by Mike Hodges. And I have mentioned this at least twice on the podcast before. This is a great little noirish film about Clive Owen, who is a writer who takes up a job as a croupier in an urban casino, and it's good. It's an enjoyable, stylish, slick, mean little movie. It's very mean.
Well,
slick and mean. Wow,
slick and mean.
All right,
there's the new Peter Bogdanovich movie, She's Funny That Way, which we had a very positive review of on the site. I want to see it. I like Bogdanovich.
Mm-hmm.
I'll support my boy. Mannequin is coming to Blu-ray.
It's got Imogen Poots in it.
Did you just say Mannequin is coming to Blu-ray?
It is. It's on the top page here next to That 70s Show, the complete series.
Wait, the movie?
Yeah, Mannequin with... Who is in this?
The woman from Sex and the City.
Andrew McCarthy and Kim Cattrall.
Cattrall.
James Spader as well.
Wait. Did Billy Ocean do a song for that movie? No, that's not what I'm thinking of. No, that was Jefferson Starship. I think, yeah.
Sure. Anyway,
come on, guys.
So
come on.
That's it.
You know.
Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found in the meantime. Nick Newman.
You can find me twitter.com/Nick_Newman, thefilmstage.com, and leading my band of child soldiers through the countryside, doing what we please for what we want.
And you live in New York, so that's a very thickly populated countryside.
Yeah.
Amanda Waltz.
Burrow by burrow.
God.
You can find me at Media Waltz on Twitter. You can find my Billy Ocean fan page. I'm also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and also my blog Steel Cinema on WordPress.
All right, and you can find me on my personal site dearfilm.net, as well as thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/BrianJRowan. So join us next week. We'll be talking about Spectre, the newest James Bond film starring Daniel Craig.
You know, I withheld from singing Jefferson Starship.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to get out. Goddamn. Thank you so much. I apologize, and we will see you next week.